The hour of 8 a.m. having arrived and passed, I will call to order Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. The first bill up, Representative Poppy, we have either House File 1865 or House File 1339. Which would you prefer?
I believe 1339.
All right, Representative Poppy, we are one short right now of a quorum, but you can move your bill. We won't take action on that until we get a quorum anyway. So Representative Poppy moves House File 1339, and where would you like the bill to go?
The General Register, please.
Right, Representative Poppy moves that House File 1339 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. Representative Poppy.
I also do have an amendment, Mr. Chair, it's H1339A1.
Representative Poppy, move the amendment.
Please.
All right, Representative Poppy moves the A1 amendment. Representative Poppy, why don't you explain the amendment, because we still do not have a quorum. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. On line 1.17, it is to delete the second, the first half of the sentence that had previously been deleted. So from if a record is deemed, and then on through to the Minnesota Historical Society, and then at the end where the period is, we need to take that out as well. So it's deleting an entire sentence from 1.17 through 1.21.
All right, Representative Poppy, we'll wait to incorporate the amendment once we get a quorum. So why don't you explain the bill, and then if the testifiers wish to present also, we'll take their testimony at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This House File 1339 deals with public records retention, and it deals with somewhat outmoded, outdated kind of technology, and I actually have two testifiers here who will be able to really address the bill, and I'm going to turn it over to them. So first, Mr. Jack Reed.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jack Reese, and I'm a project manager with the Office of Enterprise Technology. I also would like to thank Representative Poppy for agreeing to carry this bill for us. House File 1339 basically addresses the issue of technology being used for retention of government documents. One of the things it does is that it removes what appears to be a perception, either real or perceived, of the requirement of using optical disk technology for this retention. And basically, technology has been changing. And one of the things I just want to point out to the committee to give you a little bit of an idea of how technology does change. I think most of you all remember this technology, which is called a floppy disk. You use it on your computer. This has migrated over to what is known as a CD. This CD can handle 486 of these. And now the technology has migrated to a point where you can get 2,777 of these on a little flash drive. So just to give you appreciation of how technology has been changing. What this bill does not do, it does not prohibit the use of optical disk technology for the retention of government documents. To give you further background on this, I'd like to turn it over to Bob Horton from the Minnesota Historical Society to give you further information.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Horton. I'm the state archivist at the Minnesota Historical Society, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to this morning to speak very briefly in support of the bill. Since this language about optical disk storage became law in the early 1990s, most government entities have interpreted it to mean that they have to, they are mandated, to use that particular storage technology for the permanent retention of archival records. As Jack mentioned, technology has changed greatly in 16 years. In fact, what seems exotic 5 years ago looks pretty much outdated now. So we have a problem with that confusion. Today, much more effective and much more cost-effective storage technologies exist. If we change the law, this will enable and encourage government entities to choose those better technologies, and that will help government entities to do their jobs better, and it will also help the state archives to do its jobs better. So the Historical Society is in full support of this bill. We're very grateful to the Office of Enterprise Technology and Representative Poppy for helping us carry it forward. All right.
Russ and Poppy, we have a quorum, so why don't you renew your motion on the A1 amendment?
I move that House File 1339 be recommended to pass.
Well, Russ, we've got the motion on the bill. We just need to incorporate the amendment first.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Representative Poppy renews her motion on the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Members, to the bill as amended. Or is there anyone that wishes to testify for or against the bill?
No.
No. Then I just have one question of the State Historical Society. How much of this technology is in the county historical societies? The county historical societies, as you know, have sometimes excellent collections, and they're getting to a point where we're celebrating the 150th anniversary of the state. Some of those are fragile. Does this technology impact the county historical societies in any way? Is it shared, for instance, with from the state historical society?
The county historical societies have a tremendous amount, Mr. Chair, of valuable information. We have been working with them through a variety of other projects to capture and make available through collaborative arrangements their image records and other records. So this does not address because they're county historical societies directly because they're not government entities, but we are working through other means and other projects to help them use technology in better ways.
All right. Well, doesn't exactly answer it, but we'll keep working on that. Thanks. Any further discussion to the bill?
Yes.
Representative Hill.
I just wanted to ask, Mr. Chair, since we're only really deleting one sentence out of current law, but there's a repealer, what's being repealed?
Representative Pop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilke, it's Subdivision 9 and Subdivision 10 of Section 138.17 that is referring to optical disc standards, and Subdivision 9 is really is old language talking about shall develop standards for storage by January 1, 1991, and the optical image storage is Subdivision 10, and that again refers to the what we've been talking about, the outdated technology. But perhaps Mr. Reese may have...
Yeah, Representative Hill, I think Mr. Reese explained it without exactly saying it was the repealer, but Mr. Reese, why don't you explain once again what we're changing here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, basically the repealer, as Representative Poppy mentioned, Subdivision 9 talks about optical disc standards, and this repealer will remove those optical disc standards. This probably is one of the biggest areas of confusion because it states that the Records Disposition Panel shall develop standards for storage of all government records on optical discs. So the repealer removes that language from the law. And then Subdivision 10 basically deals with optical image storage, and it talks about some of the requirements related to that storage. So this language all relates back primarily to the optical disc technology.
Thank you.
President Hilke?
Any further discussion to the bill? Representative Poppy renews her motion that House File 1339 is amended, be recommended to pass, and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Poppy, House File 1865.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 1865. I do have an amendment as well for that bill, and I believe it needs to be distributed.
Representative Poppy, did you move the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move House File number 1865 to be passed and placed on the General Register.
All right. Representative Poppy. All right. Representative Poppy, I believe there's an amendment being passed out to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A07-0550 is an amendment that modifies and changes the bill. And this is delete all. And there is one oral amendment I would like to incorporate into.
Representative Bob, why don't we wait till everyone has the amendment? And then Why don't you tell us where on the amendment you wish to make the change? Let's get the amendment before us. So why don't you move the amendment?
Mr. Chair, we'll move A07-0550.
All right. Representative Poppe, to the amendment.
On line 1.4, the word all, to delete the word all before medical.
Mr. Shepard, does that work?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion to the amendment? Representative Emmer.
Mr. Chair, what does it mean?
Either Mr. Shepard or Representative Poppe. Do you want to address that?
Representative Poppe. Deleting the word all.
Oh, that one. I'm sorry. I wasn't listening. I'm doing my best Bob Goodwin again. I'm looking at 4550.
If you get the placard a little lower, it's okay.
This one?
Yeah.
There you go, sir.
Representative Poppe, we'll just incorporate that change into the amendment, and the amendment now with that change is before. So, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This amendment will actually put more language out there regarding the Commissioner of Labor and Industry and actually what they are agreeing to do on behalf of federal workers, including railroad workers. So it is to provide information regarding the federal exclusions from state workers' compensation coverage. Some of the workers, when you're a federal employee, you no longer are, you are not covered under workers' compensation according to the Minnesota statute, and you are covered under federal law. And this actually talks about the communication that will happen between the Commissioner of Labor and Industry with people who work in the healthcare field and employees and employers so that they are better aware of what those regulations are. And it also requires them to report back what they've done in that communication.
All right. Any further discussion to the amendment? Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppe. Why did we take the word all out of there? I think I know, but could you tell me why?
Representative Poppe.
Well, it really is to probably clarify. The commissioner would not necessarily be talking to every medical care provider. It really is more specific to the fact that it's the ones that work with workers' compensation.
All right. Any further discussion to the amendment? All right. All those in favor of the A07-0555 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Poppe, to the bill is amended.
The bill is a workers' compensation information would be shared regarding federal employees who are not covered under workers' compensation. The department would share information with medical providers, employers, employees, other people involved in the workers' compensation system to help them to understand the federal exclusions and would report back in approximately a year's time to let everyone know how they were able to communicate that.
All right. Representative, do you have anyone to testify?
I believe I have a few testifiers.
Anyone that needs to testify for or against the bill?
Not have testifiers.
All right. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Poppe renews her motion that House File 1865, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Members, we are going to go to House File 754, Representative Mullery. He has to present his omnibus bill today, and he's on his way to do it, so we'll accommodate him.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mullery, I am going to move House File 754. Be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Yes, Mr.
Representative Mullery, the bill's before us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. We'll try to speed it up. We know we've got a big load today. This bill is a bill that was back in the 1930s. The state required plumber's licenses for everybody in the state doing work, except in towns and cities under 5,000 people. And so things have changed since then. Most people are connected to their city or township water systems, things like that. So if you have plumbing that's not done right, it can affect all kinds of people. And so all this is doing is requiring that you have a regular plumber's license if you're working in towns under 5,000 or cities under 5,000, just like you need it in the rest of the state.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think we just passed some workers' comp. Representative Muller.
And Mr. Chairman and members, there is a provision so that people who are plumbers and have worked in these kinds of jobs for over 2 years are grandfathered in so that they can continue doing it in those just as they could in places with under 5,000 people. And that's basically what the bill is about. There was one other provision added in lines 118 to 121, which protects the businesses in this state so that when they get into a suit with their suppliers, they can go to court in this state rather than having to go to Pennsylvania or Ohio or wherever else. And that's basically the whole bill.
All right. And Representative Muller, you have someone that wishes to testify?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Carl Crimmins. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Minnesota Patriots. And Representatives, I just wanted to mention that this bill's been heard in two other committees. There's been no opposition. We've worked with the Department of Labor and Industry on this language, and they've made several suggestions. We've made changes. And the plumbing contractor associations in the state are in agreement with us, and I stand for any questions.
Members, any questions? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I'm a stickler on this. We had another member that came to the Consumer and Labor Division and the Commerce Commission committee stating that there's no opposition. I just want to make it clear. It's not that there's no opposition. There were questions asked. I think there was concerns that were raised, and I don't want that to be the perception out there that there was absolutely no concerns about this bill. I just want to make that clear.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Muller, I've seen this bill before, and I approved of it. I liked it. I voted for it. But I don't recall on page one the new language. Can you I'm very confused by it.
Representative Muller.
Mr. Chairman, Representative House, the language on page one was brought to us by the dealers, the businesses that deal with plumbing here in Minnesota, and they were being forced under contracts to litigate. A lot of them are small businesses in Minnesota. They were being forced to litigate in other parts of the country by contract, and this would override so that they could not have to go to some other foreign jurisdiction when they have a dispute with their supplier.
Representative House.
Basically for the small businesses in Minnesota to do this.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Mullery, if my campaign manager does this, he sells a lot of plumbing equipment, and if he went into a contract with a sales representative, which he does all the time, and there's a... I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I'll pass right now. I'm real confused with even how to ask the question.
Well, Mr. Representative Muller, your Representative Howes, this would help your constituents. They could end up here in suit, not have to go. Your constituent would probably prefer being a court in Minnesota than having to go to some other state.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my constituent would prefer not to be in court in any state.
Well.
And I'm always, with all due respect, Mr. Chairman and Representative Mullery, whenever an attorney presents a bill to me and I can't quite dissect how to ask the question, I get really nervous. But I'm going to pass for now.
To alleviate that, we may have someone who can explain it. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'll try to provide a non-lawyer's response to the question, Representative House, because I'm not a lawyer. I represent the plumbing, heating, and cooling contractors.
All right, we need a name, though.
I'm sorry, Tom Lyman.
Okay.
I'll give a layman's perspective. Representative House, what this situation is designed to address is if your constituent was a marketing rep for, say, Kohler Plumbing, had a contract, had an agreement that for every sale he got such and such commission. Kohler, an out-of-state company, decided to not pay him his commission. Most of those contracts between out-of-state companies and in-state wholesalers currently say, if you have a dispute over your payment, you come sue us in our hometown. What this provision provides is that if your constituent were harmed and not paid his full commission, rather than traveling out of state, he could file the suit here in Minnesota against that out-of-state company. It's basically, you know, if a Minnesota person is harmed, where should the suit be filed? Here in their home state or in another state? We think it should be here in the home state. And the Minnesota Trial Lawyers Association agrees with that. Surprisingly enough.
Your comfort level just went way up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe it was legal. My campaign chairman gave me a gift certificate that he got from some supplier that could be used to go to Disney World, and I could never book tickets anywhere. They were always full. So maybe this will help future people that get something like that.
Well, when this session's over, Representative House, I think you're going to need to use them. Any further questions on the bill? Seeing no further questions, anyone else wish to testify? No, then I will renew my motion that House File 754 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Representative Eastland, I think I saw him. There he is. Representative Eastland, I'm going to move that Senate File 1350 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. Is that appropriate?
I think that's appropriate. I believe it did go to the consent calendar in the Senate, but I guess it's up to you which one.
Representative Eastland, I mean, we could send it to the consent calendar, but considering that we've had problems with bills on the consent calendar, that might actually be a delay.
your pleasure, Mr. Chair.
All right, Representative Eastland, to the bill.
Okay, the reason for this bill came from a school district in my legislative district, St. Francis District 15, who ran a bond election last fall in the general election in November for building some new elementary schools or new elementary space. And they had about 13,000 people that voted in that election, and the bond issue was defeated by about 600 or 700 votes was the margin. So the district went on with life and began to plan for how to conduct school without the new space. And a few weeks after the election, they were presented with a petition with, I believe, about 55 names on it that required them or requested that they run the bond issue again. And they looked at the petition, not knowing what it really meant, gave it to their attorney and their counsel. And it turns out that there's a statute that we have in our books that allows 50 people in any school district in the state to be able to require the school board to run a special election on a question of their that they want done on. And so what this bill is about is changing that statute. And and basically what we're doing in the statute is simply saying that I should point it out. On line 1A, it says special elections must be held for a school district on a question which the voters are authorized to pass judgment. The school board may, on its own motion, call a special election to vote on any matter requiring approval to voters of the district. And then the line that we're concerned about here is 111. Upon petition of 50 or more voters of the school district or 5% of the number voting. And so it's really, it's an or, 50 voters or 5%. I don't know why this would be in statute. I mean, the largest school district in the state, Anoka-Hennepin, could have 50 people that would require them to vote on a bond question. So what we've done in the bill is to simply change that so it could be 50 people or 5% of the number of people voting in the previous general election. It's fairly straightforward, and it seems to make good sense from a policy perspective.
Representative Eastland, do you have anyone that wishes to testify?
It was my understanding that we wanted to move bills very quickly. So the school board, I have people that would like to testify, but I don't think it's controversial.
Is there anyone who wishes to testify against the bill? Members, any questions? Well, seeing no questions, I'll renew my motion that Senate File 1350 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Me.
Representative Bunn, did I see Representative... There she is. Representative Bunn, I'm going to move that House File 1873 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Finance Committee. Representative Bunn, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for having me this morning. Mr. Chair and members, this is for House File 1873, as you've mentioned. It's a health care reform bill. And, Mr. Chair, I know that your committee is focusing particularly on the probably the health care transformation task force section, but do you also want a general overview of the entire bill? A brief one?
Representative Bunn, I would prefer at this point that Mr. Shepard just walk us through those parts of the bill that are in the purview of this committee. That would benefit both you and the committee and the state.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, the reason the bill was re-referred to this committee under the House rules has to do with Section 3 on page 3, line 20, et cetera, as Representative Bunn pointed out, which creates a health care transformation task force. And then also on Section 15, Subdivision 5, which is on page 13 of the bill, lines 14 to 18, provides that commissioners are exempt from rulemaking for purposes of developing pilot projects for health care reform payments under Section 15 of the bill. Those are the two sections I'm aware of, Mr. Chair, that directly relate to the jurisdiction of the committee.
All right. Members, if we could confine our questions to those sections, and if you have a concern on those sections. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I noticed that the Health Care Transformation Task Force incorporates the Legislative Commission on Health Care Access. And I also noticed that we're making a set of appropriations of different kinds. Does this mean that we don't need to appropriate money for the Legislative Commission on Health Care Access, or does it, or is it assumed that the money that usually goes to that is an addition to these appropriations?
Representative Bunn, do you want to answer that, or do you want to, Representative Huntley is also here, and this is a rather comprehensive bill, and I'm going to go to Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, the current budget that we're anticipating has, I think there's about $125,000 for the Healthcare Access Commission, and what will be proposed is that they get an extra $50,000 for the biennium. Now, that's been discussed with me and the head of the Ways and Means Committee.
Representative Kahn.
The question I don't understand. So is all the money for this commission going to be in your budget, or do I have to account for some of it in my budget?
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, it will all be in my budget.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Any further questions? Seeing no further questions, is there anyone that wishes to testify on that portion of the bill that's before the committee?
We have one brief testimony.
All right. Welcome to the committee.
Please identify
yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Hartwick, and I represent the Minnesota Business Partnership. I will be very brief and only speak to the task force. Representative Bunn has been very open to working with all stakeholders in healthcare, and we like that, and we look forward to working with her and with this task force if it is approved. So I would encourage you to support it.
All right. Thank you very much. Any further questions? All right. Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 1873 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you. That's good.
Representative Norton, House File 1980. There she is, 1981. Representative Norton, I'm going to move that House File 1981 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. So, Representative Norton, to your bill.
Chair Pulaski, thank you very much for hearing this bill. Committee members, this is simply a request to extend the sunset of the Maternal and Child Health Advisory Task Force, which is due to sunset this year. And this is a task force that's been in effect for 25 years. It provides advice and support on a number of issues to the Commissioner of Health. And if you have any questions, it's a very simple bill. I do have an amendment that I would like to make to get it in the form that has the sunset date in it. So,
I'm sorry, Representative North.
Chair Pulaski, if I could move the 0394.
Yes, I apologize. And so does Representative Cotton.
That's right. Well, if you could move it for me, thank you.
Actually, Representative Norton, you can't, but we can and
thank
I
you.
Will.
Yes.
So I will move the A07-0394 amendment. And to the amendment, Representative Norton.
Rather than just having an open-ended time, we would like to have an actual date of the sunset, and that is the year 2011.
All right. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Norton, to the bill as amended. Or would you wish to
I think I summarized it very quickly at the beginning. If anyone has any questions, Janet Olstead from the Department of Health is here, and she'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Members, any questions? I don't believe there are. All right, I renew my motion that House File 1981, as amended, be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Norton. Representative Nelson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson, why don't you move your bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 1283 to be passed and moved to finance,
fine.
What I've been told.
Representative Nelson, I'm going to have Mr. Shepherd just again for the committee tell us that part of the bill that is in the purview of the committee. So, Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair, members, again, under the House rule, this bill was required to be re-referred to this committee because of the provision on page 7, subdivision 13 of the bill, page 7, lines 32 to 36, which authorizes the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to adopt rules to relate to the bill.
That's what I believe to be correct. Mr. Chair, I do have two amendments. As we've been going through on this bill, been working with the commissioner and working with labor groups, been working with contractor groups to try and get the language so that everybody has comfort. And these two amendments, if I can take the A3 amendment first, that basically on page 5, line 34, it deletes an A after remedies on parentheses A, and on page 6, it deletes the B section there from line 6.1 to 6.13. That gave some heartache to some of our contractors, groups, and to the commissioner, so we agreed to take that out. And then it deletes the the reference on the repealer to 181.722 on page 8.
All right. Any discussion to the amendment? Representative Nelson moves the A3 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Nelson.
And again, I also have the A4 amendment, and this is on page 5, line 10. You can read the amendment there, what it does. It basically, this is, again, comfort language, and also as surprising as it might be on the amendment, line 1.5, the contractor group came forward and said they'd like to see the fine higher for people that are violating this, to put more teeth in it and to discourage people from doing it. So again, this came from the contractors group, so that's raising the fine from $1,000 per incident to $5,000 per incident.
And any discussion, members? All right. All those in favor of the A4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion fails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Nelson, 2-year bill is amended.
And what this bill does is it's creating a system for independent contractors out there right now. There's a lot of abuse in that market. There are people that are being forced to be independent contractors. There are people that are doing it to get around having to pay workers' comp, paying taxes. They're shorting the state of Minnesota by doing this. In one estimate that the Department of Revenue said in 2003, they estimate $700 million worth of unpaid income taxes the state loses every year, and we're trying to get at a way to tighten this up. It's doing a registration process through the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. The people would come in, register as independent contractors, and set up ahead of time, and if they don't have this registration form, the person that hires them has to pay them as an employee. And the way this gives the commissioner a way to track it, that's what the rulemaking authority is. He's going to set up rules for doing this, for setting up the certificate, for setting up the way to track it, and the rules that they have to follow to go into this. And it's a way to, for him to be able then to go back and enforce this law. It's been one of the biggest problems that we've had good laws on the books having to do with independent contractors. In fact, other states have modeled theirs after ours. But there hasn't been a lot of teeth and ability for the Department of Labor and Industry to enforce the rules. So this is giving them that authority.
Any further discussion? Representative Nelson then renews his motion that House File 1283 be recommended as amended, be recommended to pass, and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Loeffler, she is here.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, someone said, oh yes, Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While we're waiting for the next bill, I would like to move the minutes of our meeting of March 22nd, 2007.
Representative Simon moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Simon. Representative Loeffler, House File 1183.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm going to move House File 1183 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. And Representative Loeffler, I believe there's... Wait, did I move the right bill? I did. There is an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there's an A2 amendment just to correct the membership of the proposed task force. It inserts the Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Council and deletes the Minnesota Citizens Commission on Minnesota's Resources. Legislative Commission.
Representative Loeffler, I'm going to have Mr. Shepard walk us through that amendment. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, I apologize if the amendment didn't make it into the packet. I do have it written for Ms. Anderson. But on page 11, line 31 of the bill, it would delete the language that reads a citizen member of the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources and insert in place a Minnesota Shade Tree Advisory Council. That's the entire amendment, Mr. Chair. I do have it written up here.
All right. Members, is everyone familiar with the amendment? Any discussion on the amendment? I will move that amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Loeffler, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The Department of Agriculture and the Department of Natural Resources work together on a variety of programs related to trees and forestry, and this bill represents a realignment of responsibilities between the two agencies to better use the strengths of each and to clarify to the public who's doing which. DNR will be the lead agency on consultation and tree care management for both municipalities and community forests, as well as the larger industrial interests. The Shade Tree program was formerly or is currently in the Department of Agriculture and fits better with the responsibilities and staffing of the Department of Natural Resources and its relief program. Agriculture will remain the lead agency for new forest pest outbreaks whenever we have a new infestation of a new type of threat to our trees and forests. While DNR will continue to have responsibility in advising those who are doing forest management with tree pests that are all have been long-term established. It creates a new task force to develop a forest protection plan to engage all involved in forestry in to jointly develop a comprehensive and coordinated early detection and response plan to better prepare our state to respond to new emerging threats. You may have heard of emerald ash borer, which is a significant threat to the forests throughout the state of Minnesota. In the state of Michigan, they've already spent over $350 million and lost hundreds of thousands of trees when they didn't have an adequate and effective response when that was first detected in that state. So we're hoping to make sure that never happens here. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to respond to questions.
Members, have any questions? Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, I heard a story on CCO radio yesterday, and I heard it repeated again today about a woman who's about to give birth in 4 weeks and was pulled over for a general identification or minor traffic violation, and there was a warrant for her arrest by the garbage can police and in Woodbury, of no less Woodbury, but... My comment is I'm hoping that the cities go very gently on hiring tree inspectors, because I can just envision now someone being arrested on a warrant because they planted the wrong tree or didn't cut the right branch, or, God forbid, they cut a branch. It's just my little poke at government. Maybe government's a little bit too much in our life, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Howes, I believe I've alluded to that a couple of times already.
You have. I just was backing you up, Mr. Chairman, in case you needed that.
Yes, Representative Loeffler, you want to respond to any
tree
police? Mr.
Chairman and Representative Howes, the tree programs that you're referring to already currently exist. There's nothing in this bill that will encourage the creation of more or more vigorous enforcement by them. It is simply a clarification of responsibilities between the two agencies on those programs. And the cities that have them, and we have people here from the Department of Agriculture and DNR who can answer more specific questions, but this just is a transfer of responsibility and not a major shift of those response, of how those are carried out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just for the record, that if a tree inspector were to ever issue a ticket and the person moved from the residence and didn't get the ticket in the mail and a warrant was issued, that it's on record by this body that we're not going to have that person arrested under that warrant.
Representative Loeffler, you wanted to confirm that?
Nothing in this.
Mr. Chairman, I will leave that to the departments to confirm how they're going to handle enforcement. Quite honestly, the issue of how we do enforcement and how we educate the public to respond effectively. If we catch these things early, hopefully we're not going to have to do enforcement, like putting those orange rings around the trees that we've seen too frequently because of Dutch Elm.
Well, you're the first of what will be at least two bills dealing with trees.
Mr. Chairman, there's many tree huggers in this world. And I'm
waiting. Any further discussion to this? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 1183, as amended, be passed and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank
Representative
you.
Loeffler, you have House File 2135. I will move House File 2135 to... I'm going to move it to the General Register. There was a suggestion to move it somewhere else, but I don't know if that would expedite your bill or not. Let's go to the General Register.
That's fine, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Law.
Mr. Chairman and members, we have a big birthday for the state of Minnesota coming up next May 11th, the 150th anniversary of our statehood. And we passed a law 2 years ago creating a 17-member commission to establish plans and celebrations throughout the state of Minnesota on this. I'm a commissioner appointed to that, as well as Beth Hartwig, who testified before you earlier and is here in the audience. And they've been working hard to develop within their scope of responsibilities some exciting plans. But in doing so, we ran into a major issue in that we were directed to raise private funds to match public funds in making this event happen in a public-private partnership, and determined that we did not have authority to have those funds raised to do anything that go to the general fund. instead of being dedicated to the purposes by which they would be donated. So what this bill does is authorize the commission to accept donations and other revenues for the purposes of commemorating the Minnesota sesquicentennial, make sure that those are considered donations to the state. It authorizes us to enter into contracts to carry out the purposes of the funds received, and also does two other things. It specifies the conditions by which the commissioners can meet by a telephone meeting. We have representatives throughout the state of Minnesota, and if you might may remember the big Friday snowstorm that happened on one of our commission meeting days. It would be useful for us to have people be able to phone in and take advantage of that. The last change that it makes is it drops the responsibility for us to do capital improvements. I think someone in putting this together thought we might do a big bonding implementation, and I think that the Historical Society will retain its traditional role in providing grants for historical renovation.
Any questions, members? Representative Peters.
In my life's experience, typically even on 50th birthdays, people say, don't celebrate them, and please don't surprise me. I can't imagine if you triple it, what happens. In my house, it would never fly.
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Peterson, my husband's aunt lives 211 with improved medicine. You never know. That opportunity might be available to someone in this room. I don't expect it'll be me.
All right.
I don't want it.
I second that.
I didn't say anything.
All right. Any further discussion?
We just zoned in on you.
Representative Loeffler, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2135 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative Dill, there he is. Representative Dill, I will move that House File 1021 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. Representative Dill, two-year bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're here for the final section of the bill, which has to do with the rulemaking, starting on page line 2.30, section 6.
All right. Representative Dill, to that part of the bill.
Any questions? What this provision allows is the DNR to use the good cause of provisions in their rulemaking and to tailor rules without going through the entire process to meet the intent of the bill, sections 1 through 5.
Members, Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dill, this is a whole lot better than the bill you had here the other day. But it's, I think, the third time this session I've read use the good cause exemption. Now, let's say the DNR did something with rules using the good cause exemption, and a bunch of people in my district got upset and, you know, phone calls, letters, would you then hold a public hearing on that and talk about it and maybe change your mind or something if it became apparent that the public was upset? Could you do that?
Rep. Sam Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think we would because I'm not sure I could satisfy you anyway.
Well, Mr. Chairman, how about my constituents that often go up to your district to vacation and enjoy the wonderful country you have and spend lots of money?
Rep. Sam Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason that we have recommended several things, he's referring to the Game and Fish Bill on the pheasant provision and some of the other things, is because those things have been scoped out in terms of the biological impacts, and this is no different in this bill. There's been a huge stakeholder process that got this bill to this point, and where there were many, many organizations, there was a consensus on the provisions in this bill, and so the good cause is used to expedite and to actually save money by the state. If we haven't done that, we haven't used that, at least in my bills, we haven't used that provision when we thought that we weren't on solid ground. I guess that's the answer to the question that I can give you, unless Mr. Meyer has something to add.
Representative Pat.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, I guess I need a better explanation of the good cause exemption, and I also want to know what we're saying when we say Section 14.386 does not apply to the rulemaking, except to the, what the last sentence means.
Representative Diller, do you want Mr. Meyer? First of all, welcome to the committee, and then please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Actually, I'd like to have Mr. Shepard, since he has the statute book there in front of him, describe those sections if possible.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Kahn and members, under this good cause exemption that's referred to here under Clause 3, the DNR could use that procedure. Clause 3 says only to incorporate specific changes set forth in applicable statutes when no interpretation of law is required. So, in other words, if the DNR were going to use the good cause exemption for this, they would have to basically amend their rules only to do exactly what this sections 1 to 5 of this bill require without otherwise interpreting. And they would have to present that proposed change to an administrative law judge at the Office of Administrative Hearings who would determine if it met that standard or not.
And then the explanation of the last sentence.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, Section 14.386, among other things, provides that rules that are adopted without going through the full process only stay in effect for 2 years. And so this would say that doesn't apply, that if they go through this good cause exemption and implement, change their rules just to conform to this bill, that those changes can stay in effect indefinitely.
And the last phrase of that?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Shepard.
And Representative Kahn, where it says that 14.386 does not apply except to the extent provided under 14.388. Part of 14.386 requires things to be submitted to the Office of Administrative Hearings for their review and to publish in the State Register. And because 14.388 does require that, so they'd have to do those things.
Then the final thing, one of the things in rules, veto by the governor, is it still applicable to this?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe it is, and let me just double check that. The governor has authority to, under existing law, to veto all or a severable portion of any rule by submitting notice, and I'm not positive. I think
okay.
It applies here, but I'll have to double check that.
All right. Any further questions? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, how many commercial fishermen are there now?
Representative Dill or Mr. Meyer?
There are 24 commercial fishermen that fish for a variety of species, except lake trout. And there are right now practicing about 3 commercial fishermen who are licensed by the department to take lake trout presently. In law, as you can see on page 1, there are 50 licenses available. However, this bill changes it to 25, and that came from the stakeholder process to reduce the number down and to limit it more than the present law.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion? No. Representative, do you have anyone else who wishes to testify?
No, sir. We are ready to move forward if the committee sees so fit.
I will renew my motion that House File 1021 be recommended to pass. This is to set this to the General Register. And be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dill.
Okay.
Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen, I will move that House File 1016 be recommended to pass, and would this go to
General Register?
General Register. All right. Representative Hansen, I'm going to have Mr. Shepard explain what part of the bill is applicable to this.
Mr. Chair and members, on House File 1016, Section 2, on page 2, lines 4 to 7, has a rulemaking exemption for DNR orders approving possession of firewood on DNR land. And I believe that's why the bill was referred to this committee.
All right. Representative Hansen, to that portion of the bill.
And members of the committee, I think the previous bill and the testimony about the rulemaking was a good explanation of that portion on section 14.
All right.
Mr. Meyer's here to answer any questions.
Members, Representative House.
Oh, just a small question. Oh, Mr. Meyer's still up there, so Mr. Meyer, under the rule where it's the commissioner shall, now I know we discuss shall, may, and all those different times. Does this create a lot more work for him? Would there be times that maybe the commissioner didn't feel a need to do that? Is shall the right word?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative House, it is because we do this every time as the committee is becoming aware, more aware. We do take our rulemaking very seriously, public notification, and the process is wherever the commissioner is designated an authority, it's either going to be full-blown rulemaking, expedited, good faith, or exempt. And we make sure that we do have that and publishing in the state register so people know, and we do news releases and things like that is something we make sure we do, Mr. Chair.
Representative House?
Yes.
Fine. All right. Any further discussion, members? Representative Hansen, is there anyone else that wishes to testify?
I have no other.
All right. I'll renew my motion then that House File 1016 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Winkler. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I
do your bill.
Thank you. Actually, if I could have a page distribute a handout that I just got here at the last minute. And I'd also like to offer an oral amendment. I'm hoping Mr. Shepard can help with that. And that would be to add a sunset clause to this bill after 4 years.
Mr. Shepard, where would that be inserted and what would it be?
Mr. Chair and members, I would suggest that on page 2 after line 32, a new subdivision 7 be inserted that would read, this section is repealed June 30th, 2011. I'm asking Representative Winkler, is it 2011? Would that be the...
Representative Winkler?
That sounds right to me, Mr.
Members, is everyone familiar with the amendment? Then Representative Winkler will move that amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. To the bill is amended.
Mr. Chair, members, we see today in Washington...
Representative Winkler...
We don't have a motion, do we?
Hold it. Hold it. I don't think you've moved the bill.
I have not moved
the bill. I thought you had. We can't amend nothing, so let's back up here a bit. Let's first of all move the bill, and then to where you wish it to go.
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 1896 be passed by the committee and referred to the Finance Committee.
All right. That motion is before us. Now that the motion is before us, Representative Winkler then moves his amendment. All those in favor of the amendment, again, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Now, to the bill is amended. Thank you, Representative Winkler. Representative Kahn.
Sure. I'll wait
for it. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Explain the bill.
Members, as you're aware, it's now 2007, and the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission are only just moving their way. The final recommendations are only just now moving their way through Congress. Since 9/11, we've seen Hurricane Katrina. We have seen the failures of the Department of Homeland Security to quickly and efficaciously secure the country from a variety of potential disasters and terrorist attacks. And we've seen the failure of the Federal Emergency Management Agency to protect people in Louisiana and other places. Those lessons show that each state has to be primarily responsible for protecting its citizens and preventing disasters, whether natural or man-made, And we see those disasters every year, including floods, as we've seen recently, tornadoes, and we see potential disasters, including pandemic disease, potential terrorist attacks, and a variety of other things that we need to be concerned about. Unfortunately, or fortunately, we've done a great deal of work in preparing for emergency management, which means managing a situation that occurs rather than spending enough time managing and preventing these potential disasters. The types of things that we have to worry about don't fall neatly into department silos like the Department of Health or the Department of Public Safety, but in fact cross those boundaries. We also see that the silo and jurisdictional divisions can be a challenge in local governments. There are approximately 260 cities, counties, and townships just in the metro area, and each one is tasked with looking at what happens within its own boundaries rather than looking across boundaries. And none of these disasters, as we know, would fit squarely within one of those geographic restrictions. So the task of the Legislative Commission on Terrorism and Disaster Prevention would be to first look at the comparative risks that Minnesota faces, comparing the likelihood of risk with the potential disaster, so that we begin to allocate resources effectively. It would also be tasked with recommending policy changes and recommendations both to the legislature and to the agencies, and to provide oversight over agency and state and local spending on prevention and emergency management. You have in front of you a letter from Dr. Mike Osterholm, the former state epidemiologist and probably the nation's leading expert on pandemic disease preparation and prevention, in support of this bill. And I thought we might be ending up a little bit later, and I would have had a testifier here in support of the bill also, Jeff Spartz, who was the, until recently, the CEO of the Hennepin County Medical Center and has been actively involved in the planning exercises that are undertaken through the health system to deal with a number of these issues. But his emphasis to me has been that most of it has focused on managing an emergency rather than prevention. And the turf battles that they've run into with agencies who are not primarily tasked with this type of work have been a real hindrance, and he sees it as a challenge to effective preparation. And so with that, I'll stand for questions.
Questions?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In accord with moving the agenda along and looking at a bill coming up here at the end with Representative Moll, I was wondering if on line 11, if genetic terrorism is should be a part of this bill too.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, if you could define that term, I suppose we could consider it. Or we could just bring it to the Legislative Commission as a concern once it's established.
Representative Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it probably fits under man-made. Thank you.
Representative Olson, anything else?
No. Thank you.
Representative Kahn.
The Chairman, Representative Winkler, couple of concerns, and maybe it's just that I don't understand this sentence, and that's on 211 to 213, that's the legislative members. I don't understand how their term expires. At the close of each, does their term expire at the close of the regular session, or until their successors are appointed?
Representative Winkler.
I mean, you could see.
You're right. I see your point, Representative Conlon, and an amendment would probably be in order. I think that the.
What you want.
And would be an or.
Okay. Will or work? I mean, what you want is you're wanting new members to be sure that they're appointed at the end of each legislative term. But in case leadership is slow in appointing members, you don't want to deprive the commission of representative of legislative membership. So I don't know how you fix it.
Mr.
Or just
is there
does
a way
it.
To fix this?
Mr. Chair and members, if just so that there wouldn't be any confusion about the and or the or, it might be possible to delete the and insert but continue to serve until their successors are appointed. If that's the committee's intent.
Representative Winkler, are you?
Mr.
You want
Chair,
to move that amendment?
That amendment would be acceptable, and I'll move it.
All right. To the amendment, members? All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any amendment is adopted.
Johnson.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I don't quite understand the appropriation. I don't understand quite why we call it a legislative commission when it's based in the Department of Public Safety. I don't know if there's any other case where we do that. I thought legislative commissions were usually based in the legislature. And so I would suggest you either base it in the legislature or take out the word legislative and just call it a commission on terrorism.
Mr. Chair, the intent was to base it in the legislature, and the I don't know where the appropriation language, why that ended up in there for public safety. And frankly, I think that would be a mistake because it's not just public safety. If they were the only ones dealing with it, then this would not be necessary.
Mr. Shepard, on page 3, the appropriation. Representative Winkler, where do you wish the appropriation to go?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we could potentially amend this in the State Government Finance Division to get it to the right spot.
All right. Representative Kahn, we could wait. This is going to finance, so we could wait there and see what division would... this is going to come out of someone's account.
I know. I was sort of hoping it would stay in public safety, but I
didn't. now that you've brought it up... might have been better that you
maybe had. We can take the money from public safety and put it to LCC or something.
Right. This will, Representative Winkler, this will be something we're going to have to look at in finance.
Yes.
So let's make a note of it and we'll bring it up there. Representative Filkey, did you have a question?
I did, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, why do we want the members' terms expiring at the end of each regular session? I mean, I would think you would contemplate the commission meeting in the interim.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, it would be my understanding that with the correction, with the amendment that we adopted, that the there would be members who would be sitting through regardless, unless they were appointed. But they could be appointed at the end of each regular session, a new member could be. So they would serve until they're replaced.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I'm not sure I understand. I mean, typically, I think appointments such as this would be coincident with the term that the member served rather than connected somehow to the legislative session. What was the reasoning for...
Representative Winkler? Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, there was no particular reasoning. I was relying on staff to draft this in accordance with typical practice. I'm not an expert on how legislative commission appointments are typically made.
Okay. Representative Hilty?
I actually think now that we've... the reason I insisted on the amendment that I did was that I've seen a problem when that language wasn't in place, but I think this is really what we typically do at each regular session. Well, I see this is at the close. Well, the close means December 31st, doesn't it? Or
Mr. Shepard, is this typical or atypical?
Mr. Chair, there's quite a bit of variety, and I'd certainly be willing to work with Representative Winkler before this gets to the Finance Committee on this. I'm not certain that this is probably not the typical way, but this is a mixture because there are both legislators and citizens on this group, and so there's no typical way for those groups, but I'd be happy to work with Representative Winkler on the different alternatives before it gets to Finance.
Representative Winkler, too, there are several members here on Finance, and the amendment could be offered there if this is a problem. And
Mr. Chair, to that point.
All right. We've got a list, so I've got Representative Wolfhager and then you, Representative Anderson. So to the discussion, though, on this section, Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I'll work with Representative Kahn and Mr. Shepard to put it in correct shape, and I can confer with Representative Hilty as well. Right. I think actually some of this might have come from the fact that this was originally conceived as a public safety issue rather than an LCC bill draft, and so we might just have to work through some of that to get it in the state to work it to the state of the art.
All right. Do you wish to testify to this issue?
Mr. Chairman, very briefly, I do. My name is Jeff Spurts.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair. This was my testifier to the substance of the bill, not necessarily to the appointment process.
Yeah, why don't we just wait for a second? We're on a particular section here. Representative Molshager, is it to this section?
It's to the membership.
All right. Representative Molshager, go ahead.
Chair members, Representative Winkler, I'm not in favor of the bill because in a past job, I actually worked on an EPA risk management program, which was put in place largely because of the disaster in Bhopal, India, back in 1985, and that was certainly, depending on who you talk to, that was either an act of terrorism or it was a fault of the company. At any rate, I do believe that there's laws in place larger than this. And the second point is, I don't see a legislative commission with a price tag of $1.8 million necessarily addressing this issue. So,
Representative Winkler, you want to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Volschlager, as to the appropriation, we will deal with that in finance. Again, this was the number is sort of representing the best case of what should happen. And we will certainly, I don't think there's a lot of extra money floating around to do the best case for every piece of legislation. And I would have Mr. Spurts, I think, address the issue of where we are well prepared today, what the kind of existing lines of authority are providing, and what the challenges are.
Before Mr. Spurts responds, Representative Anderson had a question or a concern.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to help out Representative Winkler, it has been past practice, what he has here, language as far as when the terms expire. A lot of times the Speaker's office won't appoint until December for a couple reasons. One, not knowing if they're going to be in the majority or not. And two, just because because there is a lot of work that's done in the interim. So I wouldn't be alarmed by that at all. I think that the language that he has sufficiently covers himself either way. Having said that, I do have one question, though, for Representative Winkler. I'm looking at lines 2.6 and lines 2.8, and it says two members with relevant experience. Is that legislative members? So are we looking at a five House members and five Senate members, or am I reading that wrong?
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, those are intended to be citizen members, not members of the House or Senate.
Okay.
I don't know that we have sufficient relevant experience.
Well,
within the body.
Yeah,
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps we could put in the word citizen. I see that you have it on lines 9 and 10, just so that we don't have confusion. Because if you look at line 2.1 and the previous page, though it says three members of the House of Representatives, just because I know for me it was, I wasn't sure. I just want to make sure it's clear.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I would move that in lines 2.6 and 2.8, the word citizen be inserted between the words two and members.
Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, I agree that it does exactly what the committee would like to do.
Right. To that amendment. To that amendment, Representative Kahn?
No.
All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. All right. Representative Kahn.
Well, I don't quite understand the difference between 6, 7, and 8, and 9. What does relevant expertise mean? Does it mean you survived a terror attack or flood or hurricane or whatever?
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Kahn, I suppose that the ultimate interpretation of that would come from the person making the appointment, but I would hope it would be somebody, for example, like Dr. Osterholm, who have significant experience in preparing and studying prevention of these kinds of things.
Representative Winkler, it wouldn't be someone who survived the legislative session.
Mr. Chair, we don't want to limit it to that because there may not be any.
All right. Representative Kahn. Anything else? Mr. Spurts, did you wish to testify to the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, very quickly. First, I need to put a disclaimer on this.
Mr. Sparks, would you just reintroduce yourself, please, for the record, okay. So we've got...
My name is Jeff Sparks. I live in Eagan, Minnesota. I'm a former county administrator for Hennepin County and former CEO of Hennepin County Medical Center. Therefore, I want to make it abundantly clear that my remarks here do not reflect the official view of either Hennepin County or Hennepin County Medical Center. I'd like to point out that a certain amount of significant work has already been done in terms of preparedness for disaster. One of the best efforts, and it came with some state financing, and that is the 800 megahertz dedicated communication systems for local governments and state agencies to access in the event they need to coordinate in a disaster or an emergency. One problem there is that the conversion of local units over to the 800 megahertz system is going slowly. It'll probably be another 10 years before you have complete interoperability. And then the 19 metropolitan hospitals put together a compact that describes how they would work together in the event of a surge capacity need for hospital beds and care in the community. That'll be useful in the event of an event that requires a lot of hospitalization. Most of the work that's been done locally has been for recovery from disaster. Less of it has been done trying to identify potential risk issues and removing those. Basically, you have, you know, the natural disasters such as tornadoes, about which you can't do much, floods and disease, and then you have those events that are created by humans. And I guess one question is do we leave our fate in federal hands, seeing how they've performed in a couple of events, or do we do what we can do for ourselves in advance of that? And I would strongly argue that we need to be more aggressive about evaluating potential risks out there, especially those that exist in the private sector, and how we can help the private sector deal with them, or how we can deal with them as a government entity. In terms of risk prevention, I'd like to use an analogy, and this is an actual case study out of the Winnipeg, Manitoba Fire Department. Fire Department had as its mission improving response times to fires. And eventually the chief decided they couldn't do any better than they were doing at responding. And then somebody had the brilliant idea of, why don't we get out there and reduce the number of fires? So they went into a very aggressive code enforcement approach, and over a period of 5 years reduced fires by 50% in Winnipeg. And then finally, an entity like this doing its evaluation might be able, or should be able, to provide improved recommendations for state policy that might need to be adopted, and potential appropriations to deal with risks and uncertainties. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Rep. Simhouse.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and maybe Mr. Shepard can help me. On page 2, subdivision 5, with data from state agencies, in the first sentence it said that commission may request, and then if you go down to line 28, must promptly furnish any data required. There's a difference there between request and required. But how much is Chapter 13 and Section 15.17, does that have anything to do with privacy kind of data, or what kind of data will they be allowed to push forward?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Powell, Chapter 13 is the Minnesota Government Data Practices Act, so making it subject to that would mean that they could not, that anything that was private under that act would not be under, would not have to be turned over.
All right. Representative Kalin.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to let Representative House know that we did see this in public safety, and Representative Holberg and others who are interested in this did not raise objections to that section of the bill.
Representative Wolfring.
Chair, members, the EPA RMP program dictated in the year 2000 that private companies did have to look at materials, both raw materials, feedstock, and final product for risk. And that law clearly made many companies in Minnesota and other companies to, for example, limit the amount of material that they had on place, or limited the amount, for example, rail cars, X number of cars of, I'll use HF as an example, but that clearly put it in place that companies had to manage the risk. And again, I just don't see how a legislative commission is going to take on risk that companies are already managing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wolschlager, you may be, and I don't doubt that you're correct in that specific application, but that doesn't address what major financial institutions need to do for failover capacity. There may be adequate federal laws on those issues, but there are a whole number of state and local businesses that don't directly apply, you know, where the issues of the pollution type concerns would be raised. And I just think of the financial sector. There are a lot of small private banks, for example, that would have to deal with those issues. And the Legislative Commission wouldn't mandate it. What they would do is to suggest policy to the legislature after having performed a risk assessment across various types of risks that could be occurring and to make suggestions on how to allocate very limited resources to prevent those kinds of things from happening.
All right. Any further discussion? The Representative Winkler then will renew his motion that House File 1896, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Representative Dabney, you see, there he is. Representative Dabney, I'm going to move that House File 2252 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair, if I could just have a moment. It looks like my testifier escaped.
Which you can't.
Wait, is Representative Dabney?
The cavalry is right.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do appreciate the opportunity to present House File 2252 to create a sustainable growth working group for Minnesota. It's an exciting opportunity for us as a state and an idea that has already generated quite a bit of interest in diverse circles in this building and, more importantly, outside this building on the idea. House File 2252 creates a working group composed of legislators, representatives of different state departments for the executive branch, and members of the public from various perspectives with an eye toward improving the strategic coordination of public investment in the state in a way that better supports sustainable communities throughout the state. I have in my possession, and we can have the page copy if members wish, a letter of support from the Association of Small Cities, for instance, who are looking for to support the working group as a way to coordinate transportation, public safety, public health, affordable housing, other inputs into the communities in a way that efficiently uses that those resources, coordinates the services, and coordinates the implementation of those. With me today, Mr. Chair and members, is Mr. Warren Hansen, President of the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund.
Hi. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman and committee, my name is Warren Hansen. I'm the president of Greater Minnesota Housing Fund. We serve 80 counties of Greater Minnesota with affordable housing finance. We've also branched into community development, planning, and technical assistance to help small cities around Minnesota do better community-based planning. For the past 2 years, I've been chair of a state policy committee that was convened by the McKnight Foundation and has been looking at comprehensive policy options for improving Minnesota land use, urban design, affordable housing, and transportation choices while preserving and protecting our environment. We've been convinced over this last 2 years that a broad base of stakeholders from business, state agencies, the legislature, the administration, and philanthropy should be convened to jointly study how to better coordinate the state's public investments with both economic prosperity and clear environmental sustainability goals in mind. The process we would propose would be to convene this broad base of stakeholders for a period of about 8 months and to bring a report back to the legislature in February of 08. This group would look at best practices nationally used by other states. It would look at research It would support that's being suggested in terms of the funding support for this process would be complemented by philanthropic support that organizations like mine and foundations would be willing to provide. The McKnight Foundation, as you probably know, convened something called the Itasca Project a couple of years ago, which looked at a lot of issues that are affecting the metropolitan area and the state in general. And some of the members of the Itasca Project Committee are willing to serve on this task force if they are asked. So there is high-level business community support, high-level foundation and philanthropic community support for participating in and helping with this process.
Any questions? Representative House.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, could I put an effective date in here of June 29th, 2008?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Powell, as long as it's not a smoking amendment, I'm willing to continue to discuss it with you further. I think we need to have the study group first and then work on the effective piece.
Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, with all due respect to Chairman Dabney, because he's been very gracious in hearing some of my bills, that this appears to me to be a Met Council border to border. That's just the feeling I get. Mm-hmm. So would you comfort me in that this is not your intent? Your intent is just to bring good advice to people in St. Paul on how we can best manage the state and its resources, with no intention at this point in time of creating a Met Council statewide.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative House, assurance provided. This is about getting stakeholders around the table so those multiple perspectives are there without putting handcuffs on anybody.
Thank you. Sir, Representative House, that's not an amendment that you were...
It was just getting him on record to say that he's okay with not going statewide.
All right. Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things. First of all, Representative Dabney, I'm struck by the title of Section 1. Fairly well-known economist has observed that anyone that thinks infinite growth on a finite planet is possible is either a madman or an economist. And I know you're not an economist.
Not quite sure.
There are many people, Representative Dabney, that think that that sustainable growth is kind of an oxymoron. And I think I think about that a little bit. But what I really wanted to talk about in the way you're putting this group together is I think there's a really glaring omission, which is anything to do with energy. Sorry, that's kind of my focus these days, but you know, globally we are in a situation in which I think it's becoming more and more clear. There's consensus forming amongst industry experts that global production of petroleum either has already peaked or certainly is about to. We have basically the same situation with natural gas, and actually now there's beginning to be consensus that the estimates about what kind of coal resources there are on the planet have been grossly overestimated as well. So when we're talking about sustainability without any consideration of the implications of the decline of hydrocarbon fuel resources globally, I think that we're going to have a focus that is kind of blurred and maybe ought to be a little better focused than that.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, all well put. Certainly the appointments... of the citizens could easily include people with expertise in the energy area. The Department of Commerce has the commissioner or designee. Could be the commissioner, I would assume, would designate someone. It could be someone who deals with energy in that department. Your point is very well put and very well taken.
Any further? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was, in another way, I was thinking along the lines of Representative Hilty, but not with regard to the initial comments, of course. One of those days. Representative Dabney, I just read this, and I had similar concerns. Sustainable growth in a state, in all across the country for that matter, when we have also rural decline, is a concern. And I wonder if you would, I'd like to offer some suggestions that I will introduce as amendments, but I'd like to offer them as suggestions. And I apologize, I haven't had a chance to talk to you because I just now read this bill. I like what you're trying to do. I'm kind of in the middle of it where we have such excessive growth.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look on either ends of the spectrum and see decline in some areas, though I see a little bit of change going on in the urban area, which I'm encouraged by. But if the title, I thought, would be helpful to say Rural Sustainable Growth and Rural Decline Working Group. And then on line 22 of that page, include balanced representation from rural, urban, and suburban areas. And then on page 2, line 5, at the end of that line, include principles that will address metro growth and rural decline to guide decision-making in Minnesota. I believe this would make it give it a more balanced focus, more comprehensive approach, and really the whole picture of what's going on with growth.
I was listening.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson. You know, part of the my interest in this legislation when it was brought to me is the opportunity to work statewide. I may represent part of the urban core, but my family has deep roots in a couple of different rural areas of Minnesota, and I've got a real I try to have an emphasis on that state part of state representative. So the balanced approach, the balanced representation, I think, on 1.22 is fine. I think that was assumed or expected, but articulating that is a plus. I'm hoping that this working group isn't about rural decline, but is about finding ways to work with environmental, energy, economic, cultural changes around the state and supporting all of our communities. That certainly will involve engaging with those dynamics of population loss and economic change in rural Minnesota that have led to a lot of decline, but hopefully can also find some ways to assist those rural communities in finding strategic points in the economy that can allow them to grow and flourish and not just decline. So there's something about the sense of a sustainable growth and then rural decline working group that I'm having a hard time embracing here.
All right. Members, we have session at 10. Representative Wilson, if you want to offer that as an amendment, and I don't know what Representative...
No.
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry, there's a hearing at 10.
Well, no, I did state that I wanted to begin with a suggestion of all those points, and I will move on line 22 to insert after the word include,
all right,
balance. For include balanced representation.
And Representative Olson, what was the other part of your amendment then?
I'll take the part he's accepting first.
All right, Mr. Schell.
Mr. Chair, members, as Representative Olson indicated, this amendment would be page 1, line 22, after include, insert balanced.
Representative Debbie, you want one final comment on that before we...
I'm certainly in agreement with this proposal from our...
Representative Olson moves the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second amendment, Mr. Chair, and I'm open to other language, Representative Dabney, but I, being in the place that I am, serving the area that I have and the level of growth we've had, knowing from my door knocking and meeting people and moving to the area that our growth is an integral part of rural decline. And even from the core city in the early years, I can't help but see how we can really address sustainable growth without looking at where the decline's coming from. I understand, if I understand you correctly, you may have a concern with the language and using the word decline. We could come up with some better language, that'd be fine with me, but I really feel we need to identify that, because if you don't have growth, we now have a balanced working group. And if we don't have growth to work with out in rural Minnesota, I don't know what they're going to look at. I think we need to highlight rural concerns, rural growth concerns, or the lack of growth concerns. So I'm open to other words, but I'm going to move online for time's sake, and unless you have some other words, language to put in there. I'm going to put in on 1.5 in the section 1, sustainable growth and rural growth concerns.
Mr. Shepherd.
And if you'd like it all in one, Mr. Chair, I'll give you the other part.
You want to make one more point?
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
Thank you. On page 2, after the end of that line, insert will address metro growth and rural growth concerns. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I prefer rural decline. It's just clear to me. We'll address metro growth and rural decline. Do you have a suggestion, Mr. Representative Dabney?
Well, Representative Olson, why don't you get this before us, given the time here, so we can work from this.
Okay.
So let's get what you want and get Mr. Shepherd to make sure it works.
Thank you.
And then
for
we can go to Representative Dabney and find out if he likes it.
Thank you for your patience, Mr. Chair. On page 2, line 5, after the line, after principles that, insert will address metro growth and rural decline, 2, and then delete on line 6 the word will. So we'll read principles that will address metro growth and rural decline to guide decision making in Minnesota. And then on going back to page 1.
All right, Representative Olson, Mr. Shepherd's got a... We have to know exactly what you're doing here before we can...
Apologize for the confusion with the language. But I'd like to use the word rural decline instead of...
All right, Mr. Shepherd, repeat for us what the amendment is.
Mr. Chair, members, there's two parts to Representative Olson's amendment. On page 1, line 5, after growth, insert, and rural growth concerns.
That's where I want to go back to rural decline.
And rural decline, excuse me. Page 1, line 5, after growth, insert, and rural decline. And then on page 2, line 5, after the word that, at the end of the line, insert, will address metro growth and rural decline to TO. And then on page 296, delete the word will.
That is correct, Mr.
All right. Members, everyone understand the amendment? And then Representative Dabney, what's your position on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I was somewhat involved in some of the discussions on what this working group should be called. And the folks who brought me this legislation have struggled with that, trying to find what's the proper language that encompasses the core mission of the group, avoids the hot words of yesterday or today. While sustainable growth works for me, it may not be the right words. I'm still not convinced, however, that rural decline is the right words either. I guess we all learn that it's much better to be positive and frame things in a positive way. So while I think Representative Olson is hitting the right issues, I'm still not interested in the language. I'm certainly willing to have further dialogue with Representative Olson if this bill moves forward on what our language should be so that it encompasses the goals I think we can share, but in language we can also agree.
Aye. To the amendment, then, members, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer an amendment on line 1.20, and this is just an arbitrary location, but between environmental and affordable, insert the word energy, comma.
Mr. Shepard.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think that works to address what Representative Hilty is trying to accomplish.
Representative Davin.
Love it.
Then I will, or Representative Hilty will move that amendment. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? That amendment is adopted. Representative Kahn.
Not wanting to be picky, but isn't environmental kind of an adjective in a whole bunch of nouns?
Mr. Sheck.
Mr. Chair, I think if it were read to modify sectors, it probably works here for the purpose that the author intends. It would be one representative of the environmental sector.
Okay. All right. Representative House, did you have a question?
Mr. Chairman, do you have the room reserved for 9 o'clock tonight in case we don't make it?
I do not.
You could maybe point that out.
I thought I had that we were under the gun here to...
Mr. Chairman, you can point out that we do have it for 9 o'clock.
We do have it for 9 o'clock. Do we?
Calls.
We do have the room reserved.
If it takes any longer for these bills, we have it for 9 o'clock.
Okay. So I guess we do have it for... I didn't reserve...
That, I'm sorry, without your permission, but I thought...
There's some hows, and I'll return the favor at some point.
You will.
All right. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, I'm looking on page 2 in the appropriation of $100,000. Can you tell me why that amount for a year-long working group and what that money will be used for?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask to recognize Mr. Francis.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's my understanding that working groups and commissions do need staff and that there are... events and processes and research that need to be conducted. I believe that the majority of those resources would essentially go to an agency to pay for the staff, FTE equivalents, and miscellaneous out-of-pocket or office expenses to commission this work and facilitate the meetings of the working group.
Any further discussion,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Anderson.
Also, on that same page, looking at lines 18 through 20, I'm concerned that this group that is going to be looking at sustainable growth with the intent of being objective about it, and normally I wouldn't bring up this issue, but I am concerned that this group would be able to accept gifts and grants, and I'm just wondering how that would play upon their objectivity if they're receiving grants, say, from a company or... some kind of organization.
Representative
Dan. Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, my understanding is that there are members of the foundation community who are interested in seeing this sort of state discussion move forward and are willing to come in and support it. That would be from the foundation community. My understanding is that's the intent, not members of the private sector or individuals.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Representative Dabney, would you be willing then to change the language to reflect that it would be coming gifts or grants coming from the foundation community, and then to also put in language perhaps that would make it so that members of the commission wouldn't know where the money was coming from, just to make sure that they are kept clean and clear and are able to make decisions based upon the information and not who's giving them money.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I certainly share your goal. If staff could assist in coming up with some language, I'm not sure whether what our standard practice is in terms of kind of blinding commission members to where the financial support is coming from, and perhaps someone else on the panel would be able to assist me in that.
Shepherd, do you have a solution?
Mr. Chair, members, two brief comments on the first part of Representative Anderson's suggestion. I think on page 2, line 18, after the word grants, if the committee wanted, you could insert the phrase from nonprofit foundations. That would then limit where those gifts and grants come from. The second part, I think, is more difficult because under the Government Data Practices Act and some other laws, any money coming into the state treasury and where it comes from is generally considered public information for anybody. So I think that I'd have to give more thought as to what would be involved in changing that.
Well, so far it's a suggestion. Do you want to make that an amendment?
Mr. Chair, let me do this. Let's get the language that we know works. So on line 18 of page 2, after word grant, but before the comma, insert from nonprofit foundations, comma, and then continue with the remaining language.
All right, so that's you're moving that.
I'm moving that.
All right, so members to that amendment. Representative Kahn.
I would oppose the amendment. It's difficult enough to do fundraising. I wouldn't put other restrictions on it.
All right, so. Representative Davenport.
Mr. Chair, the amendment is acceptable in concept. Perhaps one strategy that could be different or could be a complement would be to require the working group to identify in its report where the funds that supported its work came from. Sometime. That way everyone can evaluate the report not only in its content but also in its funding.
Representative Kahn.
Also pointing out that would exempt what I'm sure we want to have is public sources like cities and counties and that kind of thing, too.
All right. Representative Olson, to the amendment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
To the amendment. No further discussion. Then Representative Anderson moves the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I would like to move the language that Representative Dabney suggested that at the time of the report that it submitted on February 1st, 2008, that it include where the sources of funding came from. And I think that's on line 10 of page 2. It says in the process for implementation to the legislature and the governor by February 1st, 2008, including... And this is perhaps where Mr. Shepherd could help me out.
Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chair, members, I would suggest on page 2, line 10, after the period, adding a sentence to read, in its report to the legislature and the governor, the working group must identify its sources of funding.
Representative Dabney.
That's acceptable. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
All right. Any further discussion on that amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Olson.
Representative Dabney, if I read this correctly, there's 14 members in this working group. Is that correct?
And then the 12th.
Representative Dabney is indicating yes.
Mr. Chair, 14 members from the legislature and the executive branch, and then 12 members of the public.
Oh, I see that. Yep.
All right.
Mr.
Representative Olson.
Thank you. Representative Dabney, I also now realize, I think, your point of offense or concern with my previous amendments and understand that. My concern with the bill is that if, depending on the views of those who are appointed to this working group, with that without the language I'm advocating for, we could end up with a working group that continues to advocate for the same concerns we have going on today and just keep it perpetuating. So I'd like to move on page 2, line 5. I'll just try this. We'll avoid the title issue that you raised. On page 2, line 5, it's basically the same amendment with some modest change. After principles of that, at the end of that line, insert, will address metro growth and rural growth concerns to guide decision-making in Minnesota, again deleting the word will.
Representative Olson, is that a suggestion or an amendment?
That's an amendment.
All right. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, members, as I understand it, on page 2, line 5, after the word that, the amendment would insert will address metro growth and rural growth concerns to TO, and then on page 2, line 6, delete will.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Dandy.
Mr. Chair, that's acceptable.
All right. To the Olson Amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Members, the next bill, we just had people who had arrived from the Canadian border. This bill has had an extensive discussion at this point. So members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2252 be recommended to pass as amended and be sent to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
All right. Where's Representative Moe? I have a motion on this one. What's the Senate about? Sorry. Well, that's what Coon wanted.
No.
Yeah. Right. Representative Moe, I'm going to move that House File 1663 be recommended to pass and be referred to Biosciences and Emerging Technologies. Chair Mahoney has requested the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Conner.
I would move to amend that motion and would move to, because that's essentially, Mr. Chairman, a motion to kill the bill. Because we've passed the policy deadline, and because that, you know, I must say that Chair Mahoney had plenty of chances to request getting this bill. Government operations should really, when you're setting up a new rules or a new process, should be the last stop, not the first stop. And the bill's been out for, for quite some time. So, I would, do you want it to go to, do you think it should go to finance or to the general register?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, it needs to go back to finance so it can. Its ultimate destination will be Environment Natural Resource Finance.
So, Mr. Chairman, I just think that, you know, the way to do your motion is just to vote no on the bill.
Well,
and so
Representative Kahn, I'm making the motion at the request of another chair.
Okay, well, I'm moving to amend it at the request.
All right, Representative
Kahn, we should finish the bill and then discuss where it goes.
All right. Let's do that. Well, we're under very tight guidelines. First of all, Mr. Shepard, I've moved the bill, no matter what the bill is before us. How much of this bill is actually before us?
Mr. Chair and members, I believe that the reason the bill was re-referred to this committee was because of Section 2 on page 2, lines 1 to 4, which requires the Environmental Quality Board to adopt some rules for the purposes stated in those lines.
So, members, if we could confine our comments to that portion of the bill, that's why it is before us. So, Representative Moe, would you then address that part of the bill? Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. One comment to the motion, and then I'll address this specific aspect of the bill. To confirm what Representative Kahn has said, all policy committees have had access to this bill for quite some time. We all know that our deadline is now. Any motion to re-refer this bill to a policy committee is essentially looking at all the people that have come here for this bill and to tell them that we're going to defeat it right here in this committee. So I would ask for committee support sending this bill to finance. In particular, the purview of this committee is the rulemaking process, and I appreciate Chair Pawlowski making time to hear this bill for this purpose. In Section 2, lines 1 through 4, it specifically refers to the Environmental Quality Board, which has jurisdiction over environmental impact statements and worksheets. They would be required, should an entity in the state of Minnesota ask or seek a permit
to have a test plot or to plant genetically modified native wild rice, then the Environmental Quality Board would require an EIS, Environmental Impact Statement, and then the entity trying to or attempting to plant the wild rice would have to comply with the request and complete an EIS. Specifically, that's what that portion, this portion of the bill does. It's really essential for us to provide this level of security and comfort for many of our native Minnesotans who are very concerned about the possibility of this happening. We've spent a whole lot of time getting to this point. The University of Minnesota is now neutral or on board. Many of the original opponents have now worked with us, and by their absence here shows they're no longer opposed to this bill. So with that, I just have brief comments from our tribal chairman, George Gagalai.
And could we focus the comments on that part of the bill that is before us, please? So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Good morning. My name is George Gagalai, Jr. I'm the chairman for the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today as the committee discusses and deliberates this issue again regarding wild rice in Minnesota. Representative Moe has taken particular initiative in sponsoring this bill, and I extend my personal thanks to you, Frank, for your efforts. Over the last number of years, many of you have been made aware of how we, the Ojibwe, Chippewa, and Anishinaabe feel about our Manoman, our wild rice. It is a significant part of our history as people, part of our creation story. We shared our wild rice with the first fur trappers, explorers, and European settlers who came to visit our lands and our waters. Some of those settlers were so taken by our wild rice that they named the wild rice the Minnesota State Grain. And a picture of wild rice adorns the Minnesota State Seal today. Given this recognition, one might presume that wild rice has a particular meaning, perhaps intangible to you and your families as citizens of this great state. I believe that to be true. The bill before your committee today, House File 1663, addressed the importance of wild rice in Minnesota and the context above my remarks. Seeking legislative approval for the state to develop a management plan and to protect the Minnesota grain. I am very confident in our ability, as well as the state's ability, to agree to work together on this issue. We have been managing wild rice for years, and we feel that we are experts in that area. My own story goes back to as a young child in observing the excitement, the families getting together at a very young age to harvest this sacred grain. I remember family members coming from afar to gather at my grandparents' house. My grandfather, he had been involved with purchasing wild rice and harvesting wild rice, you know, for many years before me.
Excuse me.
Way beyond anything that I could probably explain today.
No, I appreciate the testimony. We're trying to focus on that part of the bill that's before the committee. We're under an extraordinary time constraint here. So the rulemaking power is really that section of the bill that we're addressing in this committee today. And Representative Moe, you have one more person there to testify.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say one last thing.
Yes.
Thank you and the committee for support on this bill today.
All right. And sir, would you like to testify? Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Wayne Bond. I'm an associate tribal attorney with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and Cass Lake. To address briefly the specific issues regarding the rules, the rule adoption to change this requirement from an environmental worksheet to an environmental impact statement is critical to the protection of the wild rice crop in its native state that is sacred to the tribal entities in the state. That higher level, it simply provides a higher level of protection, and it requires a little more investigation, a little closer look at the potential impacts than the original environmental worksheet would have required. That rule is critical to properly assess the threat that exists from genetically modified crops and their possible contamination to the native rice.
All right, members, we're now into the other committee's time. And are there any questions from the members on this section of the bill, on the rulemaking? All right, Rep. Semcott.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is actually a subject I really know a lot about. One of the few members of this committee who's actually gone wild rice harvesting, and I recommend it to anyone who'd like to have an opinion on this. But I'm also I was the person who, with the help of now Senator Dill, did the language that required rulemaking for the purpose of looking at genetically engineered organisms. And two things that we discovered after we did that was that we were a little bit too slow in what we did, because most of it was really directed at the thought that what we were looking at was research plots, and we did not understand that genetically engineered agriculture would move so fast from research to commercial production. The other thing that we didn't realize, and that's what's so incredibly important, I'll point out that Section 3 is also relevant to us because it goes back to the rules that you're looking at in Section 2. We didn't realize how incredibly bad federal oversight would be in this. And there's several things that have happened with the wild rice industry in Minnesota due to two things. One, let me talk about how unbelievably bad federal oversight has been. The subject is divided between many different parts, depending on whether it's classified as a pesticide or as a food additive. The perfect example of the total failure of federal oversight was the example of the Starlink controversy, corn controversy, which we don't have a lot of agricultural experts on this committee, but anyone concerned with agriculture understood what an economic disaster of that was to farmers throughout the entire country. And that was due to the failure. The only people who actually could have stopped that was the agriculture department.
We are now into another committee's time.
We were scheduled to 11:30.
Genetically altered food. Now, Representative Kahn, we're dealing with the rulemaking power,
this
hearing.
Mr. Chairman, it's to explain why the language to the rules here are necessary, because the existing rules have not worked. The other thing that has not worked is that the treatment of wild rice in this state, and again, it's why we need rules, has facilitated the loss of the Minnesota industry's prominence to California. Combination of state and federal policies meant that we just threw away wild rice as a major Minnesota crop and gave it to another state, and that would do. So I think this is a really important bill, and I think it's really important that we don't kill it by sending it to biotechnology. So I would move to amend your motion that it pass and be re-referred to finance.
All right. Representative Olson, briefly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to speak against that motion. I believe this is very important. It's a very important issue, but it should go to biotech. I don't know why we've created that kind of committee in the first place if it doesn't. And the reason it must go there is this should not apply only to wild rice. I really respect the need to apply it to wild rice, but it needs to apply everywhere. Genetic issues of genetics in crops is a matter that, on a common sense basis, applies to every crop. And it should go to that committee and be expanded and move forward.
Yes. Representative Kahn, anyone else wish to speak on this in the committee?
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to add,
Representative Olson,
there's no reason it has to die in that committee. You have a rules committee to bring it back out of there. This is such an important issue. It should go there, be expanded, and move forward.
Representative Olson is correct. The rules committee can facilitate this if it needs to be. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, the number of bills that the Rules Committee has facilitated beyond the deadlines is vanishingly small, and so I doubt very much as if this would fall into this. And let me just point out that there's nothing to prevent
Representative Olson and Representative Mahoney from writing a vastly expanded bill to deal with all genetically engineered organisms and to make sure that we actually do a proper rewrite of the rules that we, of the laws that we have dealing with that. But this is very serious, and the gene once introduced in the environment will not wait for the Rules Committee. So I strongly urge,
the initial motion was to have House File 1663 pass and be re-referred to the Biosciences and Emerging Technology Committee. Representative Kahn has offered an amendment to alter that motion to send it to finance. So we are voting on Representative Kahn's amendment to alter the motion to send it to finance. Representative Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would appreciate support on Representative Kahn's motion. Effectively, this is allowing the bill to continue through our process, sending it, because of the deadline, sending it to Bioscience specifically would kill this bill for this legislative session. So I appreciate support for Representative Kahn's motion.
All right. And Representative Kahn, very briefly.
I'll just point out that your motion can be raised on the floor. It can be raised in the Finance Committee. Your motion will be available at any time further in the process. But this keeps the bill moving on now.
That is correct. All right. To Representative Kahn's amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The motion is amended. The motion before us now is to send House File 1663 to the Finance Committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and Representative Moe, your bill signed. With that, meeting is adjourned.